Hello and welcome to Holton Village. Today's date is September 29th, 2006. This morning's Bible study is presented by Village Pastor Eric Holland. Let's listen in.
Here. This is your last day here, and I hope it's been a good and enlightening and enriching week for you all. It's really been fun. It's really been fun to have you here. This nice big group filling up the place again and giving it so much life. So really, really appreciate you being here. Just a lot of fun. I'll introduce myself again. I'm Eric Holland, the village pastor, and I had just arrived here about a month ago, so I'm pretty fresh. And I just found out last night, actually, that I'd be doing this this morning. So this might have the feeling of being a little fresh, a little fresh too. But I'm glad to be with you this morning. Why don't we begin with prayer? The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
Let us pray. Good and gracious God, you give us each day as a gift. And we give you thanks for all that this day holds and all the gifts that it brings, for one more day of sunshine and light and grace. We give you thanks also for your word, which makes all our days new and fresh and filled with life. We give you thanks to be gathered here together one more time, and to be gathered in and around your word. May it shape us with forgiveness and life and love, that we may be fully alive and live as your children in this world. We pray all of this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. I have caught just bits and pieces, unfortunately, that's all I've been able to catch, of the Bible study that's gone on this week with Pastor Kimondo. And I know the theme has been reconciliation. And so I thought today we'd look at a story from the Old Testament that has something to do with that same theme, with reconciliation. And the story that popped into my mind was the story of Joseph and his brothers. And then as I was looking and preparing for this, it occurred to me that it might be kind of a nice thing just to hear some chunks of that story. So I think we'll begin this morning with a substantial bit of reading, just to hear once again. I mean, we've all heard, of course, this story, or maybe we've seen the musical, Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat, however that story is in our mind, but it might be helpful just to hear it once again. We'll take some breaks and maybe have a little discussion along the way, but we'll just kind of go through it, and then we'll have time at the end to work through it a little bit together. Sound okay? Mm-hmm. I passed out Bibles to a couple of folks. Yeah, would you like to start the chapter? We'll start in Genesis for those of you who do have Bibles, and there are more over there if you don't have one and you'd like to grab one, feel free. But feel free just to hear it too. Sometimes it's nice just to hear a story rather than worry about the words. So chapter 37, we'll actually read the whole chapter. Okay. Yeah.
Chapter 37. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived as an alien, the land of Canaan. This is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers. He was a helper to the sons of Bila and Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of the brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Once Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright. Then your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more because of his dreams and his words. He had another dream and told it to his brothers, saying, "Look, I have another dream. The sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What kind of dream is this that you have had? Shall we indeed come, I and your mother and brothers, and bow to the ground before you?" So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." He answered, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring word back to me." So he sent him to the valley of Hebron. He came to Shechem, and a man found him wandering in the fields. The man asked him, "What are you seeking?" "I am seeking my brothers," he said. "Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock." The man said, "They have gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from a distance, and before he came near him, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." But when Reuben heard it, he delivered him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but lay not a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand and restore him to their father." So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the long robe with sleeves that he wore. And they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels carrying gum, balm, and resin on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay a hand on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers agreed. When some Midianite traders passed by, they drew Joseph up, lifting him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt.
Actually, maybe we'll just...
Okay.
Just a minute. We'll just stop there for a second. Yeah. Thank you. So it begins... Yeah, please come in and find a seat anywhere. So the story begins, or that chapter begins. This is the story of the family of Jacob. And this is how the family story begins, with a father's seemingly benign favoritism. The father loves Joseph, gives him a coat, but what happens with the brothers? This jealousy, hatred. Do you remember how many times that word was used in that first reading? And they hated him. And then he's a dreamer, and he has dreams about greatness. He's given this vision of God about his family bowing down to him, and they hate him even more. And think about the violence that hatred leads them to. That one day when he comes upon them, they have even the desire just to kill him right there. Right there and then. This is the story of the family of Jacob. It's quite a story. It's quite a story. I wonder how often these same forces are part of the stories of the families that we know. This is pretty severe, no doubt. But those same forces of resentment and hostility that lead even to violence. You know, there are all sorts of different kinds of violence, not just wanting to kill someone, but just let that sink in a little bit. Think about the families that we know and the ways they so often, those relations beget hostility and violence. Of course, this doesn't end with them killing Joseph, but instead, because of this older brother who convinces them not to actually kill him, they simply sell him into slavery, which still isn't a very pretty conclusion, but that's what happens here. Someone else that I asked to read, would you maybe continue with verse 29 through 36?
I'll go ahead. Yeah, please. When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes. He returned to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone, and where can I turn?" Then they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They had the long robe with the sleeves taken to their father, and they said, "This we have found. See now whether it is your son's robe or not." He recognized it, and he said, "It is my son's robe. A wild animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters sought to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning." Thus his father bewailed him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, mm-hmm. one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard.
And how does that one resonate there? That this is then, well, then you see the deception of the brothers. You know, they try to cover up what they actually did by slaughtering an animal and making it look like he was killed by an animal. But look at the effect on Jacob. Who is here? Israel, too. I mean, that's the same name. Jacob is Israel. The effect on him. Then Jacob tore his garments and put on sackcloth, and he mourned for his son many days. And hold on to this. All his sons and all his daughters sought to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning." That seems fairly realistic to me, too, about the way the violence and the hostility in families, how that grieves perhaps those who have seen more of the world, who are older. The older generation sees the violence and the hostility among the children, the grandchildren. And there is a mourning that refuses to be comforted. I mean, this is such destruction of families, of relationships. And meanwhile, Joseph is sold into slavery. We won't, of course, read all of the chapters that follow here. You know the story. Joseph goes to Egypt, and as it turns out, he gets in good with Pharaoh and rises in power. He interprets the dreams of Pharaoh and then then the dream of Pharaoh, of course, is that there's going to be a great famine and that there are going to be good years, but then there are going to be bad years. So Joseph is set in charge of the system of bringing in and storing up all of the grain so that when the drought and the famine comes, there is food. And finally, that famine reaches even Joseph's brothers and his father, who are back up in the land of Canaan. And we're going to be looking next at chapter 42, but the verse right before that: "Moreover, all the world came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine became severe throughout the world." And so years later, this is the story of Joseph's contact with his family years later, after so much had passed. But as we'll see, those hurts didn't just fall away and die. They are still there in the midst of the story, following this family, even after all of these years. That hostility, that violence. Who would like to, what did I pass to next here? 42:1-25.
When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you keep looking at one another? I have heard," he said, "that there is grain in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he feared that harm might come to him. Thus the sons of Israel were among the other people who came to buy grain, for the famine had reached the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governed over the land. It was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he treated them like the strangers and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he said. They said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Although Joseph had recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Joseph also remembered the dreams that he had dreamed about them. He said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." They said to him, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies." But he said to them, "No, you have come to see the nakedness of the land." They said, "We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of a certain man in the land of Canaan. The youngest, however, is now with our father, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It is just as I have said to you. You are spies. Here is how you shall be tested. As Pharaoh lives, you shall not leave his place unless your youngest brother comes here. Let one of you go and bring your brother, while the rest of you remain in prison, in order that your words be tested. Whether there is truth in you or else, as Pharaoh lives, surely you are spies." And he put them all together in prison for 3 days. I'm sorry, I forgot what you said, how far.
Yeah, you can go ahead to 25.
Thank you. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here while you are in prison. The rest of you shall go and carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me. Thus your words will be verified, and you shall not die." And they agreed to do so. They said to one another, "Alas, we are paying the penalty for what we did to our brother. We saw his anguish when he pleaded with us, but we would not listen. That is why this anguish has come upon us." Then Reuben answered them, Did I not tell you not to wrong the boy? But would you listen? So now there comes a reckoning for this blood. They did not know that Joseph understood them, since he spoke with them through an interpreter. He turned away from them and wept. Then he returned and spoke to them. And he picked out Simon, and he had him bound before their eyes. Joseph then gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to return every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for their journey. This was done for them.
Yeah. I think we'll notice as the story goes around, Joseph is not necessarily a model of forgiving love. More interesting here, I think, is the story of these family dynamics of what does Jacob do when he recognizes him? He decides to play with them, actually. He treats them like strangers, and he speaks harshly to them, you know, and he knows exactly what's going on here. But he's not, you know, these forces, I guess I'd want to say, these forces of hatred and hostility that began in this story of the family of Jacob, these are still here, and he speaks harshly to them. And then also, I think it's so interesting to take a look at their response, the brothers' response. They don't even know. They don't know that this is Joseph yet. And yet, look at how what they did to him still haunts them. It still is in the back of their minds, and they encounter this hostility with another person, and their response is, "Alas, we are paying the penalty for what we did to our brother. When we saw his anguish, and he pleaded with us, and yet we did nothing." Think about how that memory of their own, the evil that they did to him, still burdens them and is with them. And they sense that coming up. I thought that this other is so fascinating, this line. Did I not tell you not to wrong the boy, but you would not listen? So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. The sense that something has to happen. This evil deed that we did bears out consequences in our lives, and it still haunts us. It's there. There will have to be a reckoning for this blood. This memory of that violence and that hostility just continues with this family and haunts every step they take. And notice Joseph is not necessarily so quick to forgive. He's kind of happy to play along here and speak harshly to them and let them stand in their fear and trembling for a little while longer.
Pastor Eric.
Yeah.
It says in the next line, they did not know that Joseph understood him since he spoke with them through an interpreter. So what is the difference in the two languages?
Well, they were speaking, honestly, I'm not sure what language, like say Abraham spoke, some early form of the Hebrew language. I don't know if it would be Hebrew
so
as we know it.
But like we do in the
well, it's actually the difference between Egyptian and this early Hebrew that they were speaking up in the land of Canaan in Israel. And Joseph's down in Egypt, and he's become an Egyptian almost. But he still remembers his family tongue and can understand what they're saying. Yeah. I suppose I do want to open, it is open, for comments along the way, definitely, yeah.
Do you think there's any connection between the fact that the ten brothers were still being haunted by what they had done and therefore did not recognize Joseph, their brother? Because there's ten of them, and Joseph recognizes them.
Yeah, Yeah.
So why did they not recognize him? Is it the haunting of what they had done that kept them from
recognizing? That kept them from seeing?
His royal robes would be one thing. He had the royal robes of Pharaoh. Who would ever look for their shepherd brother in royal robes?
It sounds like they were bowing down.
They were bowing down to him, which that's the other part of this story that's so fascinating, is this dream that Pharaoh had, that Joseph has, that kind of weaves its way through all of this, this vision that he's given by God, that he would be great. And that's another thing to keep in mind. What is this other vision, these dreams that this dreamer has from God, and how do they play out in this? Because that's part of it too. But I think that's one way to wonder about it, is here he is in royal robes. They thought he died or sold into slavery. How would he end up being a prime minister in the court of Pharaoh?
So that's what was in their mind. Therefore, they did not recognize him.
Yeah.
And that's where we get the saying, mind over matter.
What's
in your mind? You don't see the reality.
You don't see the reality.
The other thing to remember, too, is when Joseph was sold into slavery, he was only 17 years old.
Yeah.
This is probably 10, 15 years later.
Yeah, but they're all
later.
But they're older.
They're all that much older too. And he recognized.
So have you been in a high school reunion?
They might have thought he had died too.
And it almost sounds like Reuben does think he died, because his blood is on our hands now.
Mm-hmm.
His blood is on our hands.
I think also that they sold him to be a slave. They didn't expect him to become a great man in the court of the king.
Yeah. Right.
So for them, they don't think about Joseph being raised up to that extent.
Yeah.
And I don't see Joseph as being filled with much hatred. I think he is really testing his brothers to see if they have changed, to see what they've done with his special brother Benjamin, how he works all of this out through them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more of a testing. He went and turned and cried. He was so touched with emotion and love that I think he was just giving them a chance to think.
That's a helpful sort of different reading on it too. Yeah, and I think that's the intrigue and the power even of these stories, is that we can look at them in different ways and wonder, well, is Joseph being a schemer here and playing along, or is he showing compassion? But he sure does let this draw out an awfully long time.
They need time to think and to search their own souls and to feel this guilt, and so he's giving them.
Well, that's
time.
True. That's true.
But he put him in jail for 3 days. It takes longer than 3 days for the one brother to go back to Canaan.
He hadn't gone back yet.
Yeah. We hadn't left.
No.
And then he sent them all back.
Yeah.
Except the one.
With bags of grain.
There's a lot of other parts of this story that we don't even have time to read, because it does go on for chapters. But
another aspect might be that Joseph and Benjamin were full brothers. The others were half brothers, and they did not bring Benjamin along.
Mm-hmm. And he wants to see
Joseph.
Benjamin
was probably curious. Now, what did they do with him? Look what they did with me. What did they do with him?
Yeah.
And that could have been another angle to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he does. He certainly wants to see his brother.
And the question is, how would they respond if Joseph would, from the very beginning, say, "I'm Joseph," before all this? I think Joseph had a purpose to do all what he did.
He had a what?
A purpose.
A purpose.
No more of what is happening in his home country, his family.
Yeah.
And also to have time for these people to try to think
about
what they did in the past.
Yeah. That's very possible. They are pretty, this comment of Reuben is pretty contrite, you could almost say. We are now paying the penalty for what we did. It's very obvious that what they did is wrong. But I suppose there are these different ways of looking at it.
I think Joseph recognized his gift of deep perception and interconnection that he had in his dreams and what was going on.
Yes.
Going back a little bit to Jacob, look at the effect that he had on his children by favoring one child over the other.
Right.
But, I mean, sometimes you have to go back to history to understand what's going on, and I have a very strong belief that God works everything to good. And so here, because of Jacob's favoritism, there's enmity between brothers, and yet somehow God has come in and through Joseph has made things okay.
Yeah, and that'll definitely be very clear at the end of the story how precisely that is the case, that there's this dream that Joseph has at the very beginning, and this sort of plan of God, which maybe we got a little hint of here too. All the world came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain. That there's this purpose of God working itself out through here for the good of all these other people as well. For Egypt, for his own family, for all the world, it even says. You know, for blessing and life for all the world. There's something else going on. It's not just us and our often mangled interactions with each other. There are these strange, deep purposes of God running through all of this too, and we have to wait to see where those are leading as well. Yeah.
I think it's interesting too to look at Jacob and to go back to his deception with Isaac, his father, and getting the blessing over Esau, his older brother.
Right.
And, you know, what goes around comes
around. Right, precisely.
And then the whole marriage, too.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, he didn't get the woman that he wanted.
Right.
Leah was kind of foisted on him.
Yeah.
But Rachel was the one he really loved, and her two children were naturally, I suppose, his favorites.
Yeah.
Right. I think one beautiful thing about the Bible is it's not a story about a bunch of heroes. You know? These are not moral exemplars for us, necessarily. Occasionally they are. But the story, more fundamentally, is about the purposes of God working through us. Sometimes in spite of us and against us, you know, but it's such a human story, and at the same time it reveals the purposes of God. It's not a make-believe story of perfect human beings who do all the right things. It's us in the midst of this. Well, shall we? Let's see. The next place I have is for us to look at chapter 45. So, that is what happens. That he then has them, keeps one of them, and sends them back to his family to have them bring back this younger brother, Benjamin, whom he wants to see. And then when they do come back, we get to chapter 45. And did someone else have a Bible? Want to read chapter 45? Yeah. Oh.
How far?
45, 1 through 15.
Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Send everyone away from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him. So dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come closer to me. And they came closer. He said, I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for many, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And now your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my own mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father how greatly I am honored in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring back my father down here. Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, while Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him.
And so here we get, we could say, even the beginnings of that reconciliation. Of finally, out of all that history of this family, and all of the ill, the evil that has taken place in them, here it moves toward. Finally, toward, it seems, some kind of resolution. And here again is that idea that that behind all of it, mysteriously, underneath, deeply, darkly at work in all of it, are these purposes of God that happen sort of even in spite of what we do to one another. There are these purposes of God that are, it says, said so beautifully here, I think, in verse 5, for God sent me before you to preserve life. That those deep, that's what those deep purposes of God are aiming toward, is life, blessing for all the earth. That's, you know, what finally comes in the commission to Israel, is that so you may be a blessing to all the ends of the earth. Anyway, that is the those purposes moving through there. But then what's interesting is that even though we get this, and it seems like a reconciliation, there's all this weeping and this joyful reunion, what happened in the past is still not over. And it still is with this family. And again, I would even want to say, even haunts these brothers and their lives. Even after all of that. Because just a couple chapters later, Jacob dies. And once the father is gone, all those old fears of retribution and what might happen. Again, now how does Joseph really feel about us? All those things come back again. And that's how where we're at by the very end of Genesis, actually. So someone else to read chapter 50, beginning with verse 15.
Realizing that their father was dead, Joseph's brothers said, "What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did to him?" So they approached Joseph, saying, "Your father gave this instruction before he died. Say to Joseph, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong they did in harming you. Now therefore, please forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also wept, fell down before him and said, "We are here as your slaves." But Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones." In this way, he reassured them, speaking kindly to them.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. What do you hear here? I do think it's so fascinating that those fears still do haunt them, even to the very last, of what might be the results of that violence that they did to their brother. It doesn't go away easily. If there's anything I think I've been learning about reconciliation, it doesn't happen easily. It doesn't happen easily. It's painful and hard.
But Joseph is reconciled with his brothers. It's the other way around. His brothers haven't reconciled with Joseph. Isn't that true? I mean, they haven't forgotten it, but Joseph seems to be reconciled with his brothers.
And I think, isn't that because Joseph had such a keen sense of God being such a part of all that has happened? Yeah. I don't think he has any anger about it, because he sees God working through his life and using him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think another word is forgiveness.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That, it's interesting. The word isn't used here.
No.
That seems to be exactly what's going on. But this is, it's forgiveness that finally mends these relationships and these...
Was the word that the brothers said to Joseph really from their father? Or was it something that they made up to make things look good?
Right, make things look good, right. It shows the deception that's still there, right? And the fear, and what's he going to do to us?
I think it's still a story of love and forgiveness, both.
Right.
Definitely.
Right.
But we have that guilt for so many years as a brother.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't, just because you said you forgive me, doesn't mean I believe it.
Right, and that's it. Do they believe it? Can they count on it? Yeah. Yeah. Can they count on that forgiveness? Can they count on it?
To me, one of the messages is, if we live with Christ, that it's much easier for us to forgive others and to not feel those hurts as deeply, because we know that Christ is with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also to accept forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in this story, it's even harder for the brothers to accept that forgiveness.
Right.
And so we have that problem too.
Yeah, precisely. It still hangs on even after.
Do you think there was something about, what I've always wondered about the story is, he's basically an Egyptian now, and they're not. Does that have anything to do with their inability to really take him back? The Egyptians had their own religion, their own gods, their own traditions.
Does it have anything to do with their inability
to reconcile with him? He's so completely other than them now.
Right.
And it doesn't say anything about that, but it's just kind of there, and I'm like, I don't know where to put that, really.
Yeah.
It seems like in the Old Testament, and still, other than Christianity, an eye for an eye, and there's always that sense of, you harm me, expect that I will harm you back, you know. And I suppose that they just couldn't believe that he truly could forgive, because that was...
They still have that fear that he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. It's later, after like the Exodus and stuff, it becomes the chosen people, right? And everyone else is sort of out, right? On and off. I don't know. It just, that sense is missing here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that idea of being chosen is even back in Genesis. And, and Joseph here ends up wanting his bones buried back in Israel. He's still very connected to that people. So I don't know how that plays out here.
I think a lot of times, for me, it's just harder to forgive myself what I've done. You know, it's the reconciliation that has to occur within me for myself, what I've done. Forgiving myself rather than accepting. I mean, people will, you know, you'll say, you apologize just with a simple apology, and they'll say, oh, it was nothing. And I think
it's still there.
But you still keep going over and over again. Oh, what a dumb thing. You know, why
it's still
it?
There, right.
It's just really hard to forgive yourself.
Yeah. It's really kind of fascinating, the language that gets used here at the very end when Joseph forgives his brothers. He uses this this language, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid." You know, and that becomes a biblical refrain for. Kind of an announcement of God's coming to do a new thing, to bring a new thing to pass in this place. Another example is in Isaiah, where all over the place it's to these people who were in bondage. The announcement is, "Do not fear, for God is among you to do a new thing." And then finally, of course, that's the word of the angel to Mary. And the announcement that she will bear the Son of God. Do not fear. That's the word of the angel to them. So this has a deep pattern throughout the Bible of this. Do not be afraid, because that finally is what's going on with these brothers. They are afraid. That guilt is still there, and that fear still paralyzes them. And so the new thing is, do not be afraid. And then again, so have no fear, for I will provide myself, I will provide for you and your little ones. And here it's interesting too, this last little bit, in this way he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. Remember at the very beginning of this story, when we hear, this is the story of the family of Jacob. What happens when the brothers commit this deed? And then they tell their father, he refused to be comforted. He refused to be reassured. He mourned and mourned and said, I will go down to the depths of Sheol mourning, for I will not be comforted because of this. The grief that caused this family. Here on the kind of the final edge of it, of this story of the family of Jacob is are words that almost provide an ending to that, which says, here the comfort has finally come. Their father is dead, but the brothers themselves are comforted and assured. And those words actually, it doesn't show up in our translation so well, but those words in Hebrew are actually parallel. So that comfort and peace finally does, it seems, come to the family through the power of forgiveness. Yeah. Maybe we ought to simply end right now. End right there. I passed out those hymnals. Do you want to sing a hymn? I picked out one. Does everyone have one of those blue hymnals? There's a hymnal up here, 7:30. I'll take it. 7:35. Do you know this one? Hopefully the tune will be familiar. You can play the whole thing. You as you go out from here. Again, it's been wonderful to be with you. So, yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you.